Welcome, everyone, to Voice of the Valley here in the Horn Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Studios. I'm your host, Dave Bell. 428-9494 is the phone number. 928-428-9494. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're having a good day. I am. It's Thursday. It needed to be Thursday on Tuesday, and it wasn't. And so we're dealing. It's Thursday.
They both start with a T.
I need to get to the weekend. My wife has already informed me how much work we're going to be doing on the weekend. And it's like, okay, I get to go work my second unpaid job helping recycle treasures. So
that's right.
But I get to listen to podcasts.
Right.
And that's what I do. And she gets mad at me because I have earphones in and she's like, don't you want to talk? And I go, no, I want to work.
That's right.
I work quiet. It's nothing personal. I talk all day for work.
I'm the exact same way.
I just would rather be quiet, and so she has to bring somebody else in because she needs to talk while she works. Everybody's process is different. I'm not judging. I am judging. Right. Mine is better. Those voices you hear, Mark, and I want to pronounce it right, Andreessen?
That's perfect.
All right. And Lori Dugan with EA. Lori on the mic, unusual. Usually you kind of hide off to the side.
And I don't really have much to say today. I'm just here in a support role. And I'm really
so excited
for this course.
Well, All right. In that case, I'm going to embarrass Lori and say from a support standpoint, Lori is fantastic to deal with. I've been dealing with Lori since I moved to the Valley 11 years ago, and there's nobody better.
We love Lori. She's a rock star.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. 100%.
And I'm not just saying that because she's here. I mean, I really, truly believe
that. Neither am I.
I appreciate that, guys. I need that vote of confidence.
We all do every now and then.
Yes, for sure.
Mark is over in industrial education. Is that the umbrella?
Yeah, that's the umbrella. I teach the electrical and instrumentation program at Eastern Arizona College. And I've been doing it. This is my sixth year teaching this course, and something that I'm really excited about. We've been expanding quite a bit, a little bit overworked and underpaid, but
welcome to America.
Thank you. I've done some alterations to the National Electrical Code class, and I've created an online course for the National Electrical Code class. And I've even got it opened up for the summer semester. I'm pretty excited about that. Lori helped me with that quite a bit. But Eastern Arizona College, it's really got some inexpensive education that you can get. And a lot of times, the employers are willing to reimburse their employees, if not pay for it outright. So it's really exciting that they can get some extra education and learn a little bit more about the National Electrical Code. All of the answers are written in the code book, but the course helps you to find out what the question is that you need to ask so that you can get the right information out of there. Because it's all written in there, but it's written in legalese, and it's pretty complicated. And so using the text that I use a text called Cracking the Code. And using that textbook in conjunction with the code book. It goes through the code book, and it doesn't necessarily start at the front and go to the back of the code book like every other text that I've seen that goes along with the code book as a companion. This one, it jumps around a little bit. And I'm really excited about that for a couple of reasons. One, all of the engineering math and all of the stuff that goes along with that is in the second chapter of the code book, and it gets really daunting. And so people get discouraged coming right out of the gate. And this text, it goes through, it gives you an overview of the difficult stuff as it's going through and pointing out how to find the information, how to glean the information that you're trying to get out of the code book so that you can get that information and find it more easily and so it's more readily available to you. But And then it comes back and it hits on those a lot harder near the end of the class, so that you can, after you understand how to find stuff, it shows you how to find the information, how to do the math, how to find the parts of the articles that show you what you need to do, so that you can use that when you're at your job or trying to design something, so that it'll be safe and effective and not cause any fires or hurt anybody, right? Because that's what it's all about.
It seems to me, if you're on the job site and you need to figure something out, it's not going to go A, B, C, D.
Right.
You're going to be A, G, Z. Oh, let me go back to B.
Sometimes it is exactly that way. Usually the engineers have got everything thought out and it's all written down on some drawings. But not everybody that I know has got an accurate set of drawings for whatever they're working on. And they might not know what the intent was of the engineer or the architect that drew up the drawings. And so they might have to find this information out for themselves while they're in the field. Now, we're not teaching anybody how to memorize anything in the code book. The code book changes every 3 years so that electricians can be brought up to speed on the most current, most viable information that is available so that they can do their jobs properly. But instead, we're trying to show them how to find the information that they're looking for so that they can get that and apply it at their job site or at their home or whatever they're working on.
It makes sense. It actually, everything you said sounded to me like law school. Because you're not there to memorize the laws. You're there to learn how to find the laws and then apply it.
That's very intimidating thinking of it that way, because
that sounds... Because there's a wall of law books.
Yeah, because it's the... Yeah, that seems... law is actually pretty complicated, but the code book is written kind of in the same kind of legalese. It's got terminology in there that actually there's a few words that they made up just for the code, like the word ampacity. Ampacity means the amperage capacity that a wire can carry or a fuse can carry, and so it's the amount that it can safely carry to whatever is running off of that. And it's just a combination of the amperage and capacity, so it's the total full amount of amperage that it can safely carry. And they have different terms like that, and they use the word shall when it needs to be done. It means that it's mandatory. Some of the funny, quirky things about the National Electrical Code, it'll have fine print notes, and it'll have exceptions. And exceptions are also the rule. So we need to do it like this, except when you have this situation. That exception is actually something that is part of the code. And so the exceptions are also code items. And we help people to understand and distinguish the difference in between all of the terminology, show people how to find stuff. I also go through a method that I call the once, twice, thrice method. And that, simply put, is the first time you're looking something up in the homework or whatever, and you're going through your code book, you mark it with a yellow highlighter. The second time you go through there, you mark it with like a green highlighter. If you hit the same thing twice, you mark it with a green highlighter. And you can see that it's got two colors on there. And the next time you get to that same section, you're marking it with a blue highlighter. Now it's got three different colors and it's kind of highlighted darkly. But once you've hit that third time going through your homework, you can pretty much be guaranteed you're going to be visiting that section of the code quite a few times. And so if you mark it like that, I also take a sticky note and I put it on that page and say what it's all about. I put the code reference and what that is referencing on a sticky note. So I have this little tab that I can go to quickly reference that part of the code book.
Is this class for people who are just getting into electrical studies, or for people that are looking to advance within their profession involving electric?
It's really for both. So the National Electrical Code is put together by the National Fire Protection Agency, and they built the code book because they wanted the people to be able to do stuff to prevent fires and to prevent personal injury. They also include that the code is put there to keep from causing property damage, okay? and whatever that is. But it doesn't really go into big depth about the arc flash. There is some more training that goes along with arc flash training that'll keep people safe from an arc flash. As an electrician, I've been an electrician since 90, and arc flash is far scarier to me than getting shocked. I've been shocked. I don't like it, but, you know, 60 hertz as far as I'm concerned. But getting shocked is uncomfortable, but the arc flash, that can be really dangerous and deadly.
For those that don't know, and I am one of them, what is an arc flash?
So an arc flash, if I have a circuit that's coming right off of a transformer or whatever, even in an electrical panel, if I accidentally short out one of the circuits to the neutral or to the ground, before that overcurrent protection device can stop the electrical current from going through that, it causes an explosion. And the explosion, you know how when you heat water from water and you turn it into steam, and the steam is a lot larger? Mm-hmm. When you heat something up from a solid to a liquid, it gets a little bit larger. And as it gets hotter, the molecules are moving faster. They're moving further apart. But when it changes that transition from a liquid to a gas, it expands quite a lot. Well, the amount of heat that we're talking about with an arc flash creates somewhere around 4,000 degrees plus Fahrenheit. And that turns that copper into a gas. And as it expands from a solid to a liquid to a gas at incredible speeds, like within a 60th of a second or less, when it does that, it creates a pressure wave of molten, well, gaseous copper and flying debris. The liquid copper comes out, and it has an arc flash. It's extremely bright, it's extremely hot, and it's extremely dangerous. So the code book doesn't really speak on protections for that so much as there's a supplemental guide, and I don't even have a class for that right now, but there is a supplemental guide that helps you to be able to know what kind of protection you can take care of so that you can work on circuits that don't necessarily prevent that. The National Electrical Code can show you how to prevent that from happening or gives guidelines on that. But the amount of protections that you can get for if there is an incident, it's kind of like the difference between fall arrest and fall prevention. Okay. So the National Electrical Code gives you methods so that you don't cause that arc flash, but there's a supplemental guide with the National Electrical Code in conjunction with the National Fire Protection Agency that can show you how much protective equipment you need to be wearing to work on different electrical equipment.
I assume many of your students are coming from FMI or one of the nearby mines, Southeastern Arizona mines, where they hire the best engineers and they've got things planned out. So your students are walking into a fairly, if not rigidly, safe environment. But I'm also thinking about this area where PEMA's literally implementing a building code now, but they've been around for 150 years. Well, and there's got to be some danger with, okay, it's time for me to rehab a building, and you don't know what's been in there.
Right. Well, when you do some, when you're working on a building that's already built, you're supposed to bring it up to the code standards of the time that you are working on that project when you're doing your remodel or refit of a building shell or whatever. Most of the students that I have are just trying to get introduced into the industry right now. This class is different than that. This one is pretty much designed to help out the working professionals that don't have the time that they can take off of work. A lot of people with Freeport, for example, they're working shift work, and they don't work days all the time. They don't work nights all the time, and they work half of the days. So there isn't a way that they can show up every day. Even if you have it at the ideal time, you can get them half of the time. So This class, being online, is designed to work around a busy professional schedule so that they can get that work done, and they can take the class and they can further their education. The bulk of the people that are doing electrical work at the mine have already got a really good education as far as this goes. People that are working for the union, I had a union apprenticeship. I think that they're second to none. Honestly, I think that they are second to none. We don't have the same opportunities teaching in Eastern Arizona because our students, they aren't working full time, and then I just get to teach them what they need to for an apprenticeship. The apprenticeship typically lasts either 4 or 5 years. I got my apprenticeship in Utah. It was a 5-year apprenticeship when I took it. And I got a really good, well-rounded education in class. At the same time, I was able to get that good quality, how does this really go, working with journeymen that had far superior knowledge to what I had that would help not just train me, but mentor me to be the best electrician that I could be. And so that was better than anything that we can do at a community college. But this class helps people to bridge the gap. You don't always have an electrical inspector, and sometimes the electrical inspector, they have their little pet peeves that they like to, I want to make sure that you got your ground screws and your light switches or whatever it is that they choose. Okay. I want you to make sure that you have your assured grounding if you're working at the mine and you've got all your tape on those and they're identified as being tested. Okay. That's great. But a lot of what electricians do isn't somebody's pet peeve. It's something that may not be done proper that could cause a problem. And if you don't realize that there's going to be a problem, then there's no way to combat that. You have to be aware of what the problem is. And the code book shows that stuff. And this course points out a lot of those things. And it has some definitions for things that are, they seem kind of weird. So just as a little bit of a question, this is a, I guess, trivia. Do you know what it takes to be considered a restroom according to the National Electrical Code?
According to the electrical code? Huh. No, I would have, with electrical, I would have no clue.
So, yeah, and you're going to make your assumptions. I would assume that you'd have to have a toilet, right?
Right, toilet, sink.
Maybe a shower, maybe not a shower. But the sink is the thing that determines whether it's a restroom or not. You could have a sink and a bidet. You could have a sink and a shower. You could have a sink and a toilet. You could have a sink and a urinal, and that is considered a restroom. The sink is the defining factor in that. And unless you know these things, you can't facilitate that electrically according to the code.
So, all right, you did this. This is your fault now. What is it about the sink that is the defining factor, considering sinks, as a rule, aren't electrical?
That's a very valid question, and I'm glad that you asked it. So what do kitchens and bathrooms have in common?
Water.
They do have water.
Piping. They drainage.
They have drains.
In theory, they should have lighting.
They have lighting. They have a sink.
All right.
Okay. There's also fridges and stuff in the kitchen. That's not something that you usually have in your bathrooms.
Oh, in my dream bathroom, there is one.
And by the side of your bed and by the TV.
Exactly.
That's what I'm thinking.
Exactly.
So, okay, good. But with electrical, there's a little device called the GFCI, which is a ground fault circuit interrupter. And that's that one that's rectangular shaped. And it's got the little, usually a red button and a black button on there. And you push the button to test and it trips it. And it's like, oh, crap. When you go to run your electric razor, or your hair dryer or something that you might be using, and it trips that. And it's like, gosh, dang, this thing is a pain in my buttock, right? Or whatever. Those are a little safety device that was invented way back, but those don't allow more than 5 milliamps to travel through the hot wire and not back down through the neutral wire. So if you accidentally get a ground fault, if the power is coming through the hot wire and going through a person because it's going to a drain or to a pipe or to some other metal or even the tile on the floor can conduct electricity, the drain in the bathroom or whatever, if you are being electrocuted, that'll trip at 5 milliamps. That's 0.005 amps. Okay. The threshold for pain I hear is someplace around there. I never really checked how many milliamps were flowing through me when I was getting shocked. I didn't like to be hung up any longer than I had to. But that GFCI, those have saved more lives than everything else that was created for electricity since then.
Huh.
Everything else put together.
I've seen them all over the place in bathrooms and in kitchens.
They're required in bathrooms and kitchens.
Yeah.
And they save lives. So if you're brushing your teeth and, I don't know, I have a hard time coming up with a scenario.
Electric razor, maybe?
Sure.
And I'm trying to think of something to plug in.
And you're in between that and the water that's in the sink that's touching that drain, and the drain is touching the ground, and some of that electricity jumps off of that razor or goes through part of the razor because it might have some water or some sweat on there that conducts electricity, and it's busy trying to kill you because it's shocking you, that'll trip. And from what I understand, it'll probably trip before you can feel it, but I'm not willing to give that a try. I'm not willing to test that out.
That is so interesting. I never would have thought. And now all my mind is going right to the venue, because they have the toilets in one room, basically a WC, as they say. You've been in Europe, water closet, and the sink outside. So I wonder from an electrical standpoint, because there's a communal sink outside, but there are four water closets with just a toilet. Those would not be electrically considered restrooms?
That's not considered a restroom according to what we have in the United States. Now, they use the IBC when they get outside of the country. Did some work in Poland, and they had us working according to the international codes as well as the American codes, or North American codes. And in cases where the other one would be more stringent, we would have followed that one, but we never came across one where the National Electrical Code wasn't the one that was observed.
Very interesting. 428-9494 is the phone number. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Mark Andreessen and Lori Dugan from EAC. We're talking about the new class that's being offered, and you can take it online. It is the National Electric Code course. Back right after this. Welcome back to Voice of the Valley here in the Horn Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Studios. I'm Dave Bell. Mark Andreessen and Lori Dugan are here from EAC. We're talking about ELT 251. Which sounds vaguely electrical, doesn't it?
A little bit.
So the ELT is electrical. The 2 means that it's like a second year course. And then 51 because, I don't know.
You like Dick Butkus.
It's because there's a card missing from your deck of cards, I think. I don't know.
This is a class on the National Electric Code. And I'm looking at the information you gave me. And it says, to assist the learner to be able to use the NEC in everyday life as an electrician or engineer. And I wanted to ask about the engineer part. Is this geared towards those that are thinking about electrical engineering or just any engineering?
Electrical engineering. Okay. So there's several types of electrical engineering. There's electronics engineering. There's a little bit in there. The telecommunications engineering, they work with electricity. Mostly it's for electricians, power engineering, electrical engineering as far as that goes, along with commercial and industrial buildings that need to be built, power situations where you have to take care of like motor control centers or whatever. So we're talking about the bigger stuff, but also on houses. So the code gives you guidelines on what you need to do, what you shall do to wire a house up so that it has enough power at the panel to take care of all of the needs that you're going to have at the house, even a duplex, multifamily dwelling units, and all of those different situations, so that you know what size to make the panel be, what size these branch circuits need to be, what they need to power. talks about when you need to have a smoke detector in your house and where they need to go. A lot of people seem to think you're supposed to put a smoke detector in the kitchen. I think that's the worst idea of all, because that's where most of the smoking happens in our house, right? And I don't like that thing going off as a nuisance thing. It makes you want to disable it, which blocks the amount of safety that you can get from that. But you have to have them in the bedrooms. It's a good idea to have it in the hall close to the bedrooms, you know, in the places where it needs to be. But it covers a lot of those things. It's designated. It talks a lot about wattage, which is the amount of voltamps that are creating heat in things. I do a little lesson concerning the closet light. We want to have a light in the closet, because if you don't, then you have to have some light that's out in the hall or bedroom or something that's going towards the closet. And you can hardly see what's going on in there, right? And so...
back of the closet's always a gamble.
That's right. And so you can only have 60 watts in that closet, because 60 watts, it's the heat that we're worried about. It's not the amount of light. A lot of people think that 60 watts is an amount of light. And that was back in the old days, back with the old Edison bulbs. But 60 watts is the amount of heat that that's giving off. And so with compact fluorescence, you can get a lot more light with a lot fewer watts. And with these LEDs, it goes even further still. But the 60 watts, that's put in there because people stack crap up in the closet, and it gets close to that 60-watt heat source. If the light is left on when some combustible is too close to that lamp.
Oh, there's tissue paper all over closets.
That's right.
Know, around the shoes, around the hat. Well, not so much hats anymore, but, you know.
Right.
My grandmother.
Well, that's where you put your wrapping paper and
wrapping
stuff, too.
Wrapping paper and the gifts that you're hiding from somebody for who knows why. Those are right there, and you got 60-watt heat source. Somebody accidentally left that light on when they closed the closet door because they were in a rush. Next thing you know, the house is on fire. Good thing you got that smoke detector in the bedroom, right? So I do have the cost. I looked up the cost for these classes. If you are in state.
I love instructors. Not concerned with the cost. It's the information.
It's all about the information.
That's right. That's it. That's your concern.
Yes, but yeah. I want people to be able to know that they can take this class and get the value of this class for a really good value, because it doesn't cost much to take classes at EA. If you are in state, it's really cheap. So this class, it's a 3-credit class, and it costs $294 to take this class all by itself if you live in the state. If you live outside of the state and you're listening to this program because you like David Bell so much.
Wow. Well, I'm big in Puerto Rico.
Okay. No, any I'm port not, is not. Fine. But if you are outside of the state, you can take the class for $1,194 for out-of-state tuition. That seems like a lot. It may seem like a lot. It doesn't seem out of bounds. But a lot of times, like I said, people's employers will reimburse them for that, if not pay for it outright. And if you have an employer that's willing to do that, see if you can get them to buy the books. Since the National Electrical Code Book is something that is required to do electrical work pretty much, they don't feel like it's ripping you off if they want to charge a lot of money for that text. They know you have to buy it, okay? And so it's pretty expensive. And the companion to the code book that I use, it's not too overly priced. And like I said, it is so valuable. Usually with that class, I put the first set of homework, the first and the second chapters of homework, I publish those in the class so that you can get started and do the homework just on Canvas. So you're doing it online.
Yeah, that needs to be noted. This is an online course. Mm-hmm. So when you were talking about out of state, there's a reason talking about out of state, because this is purely online.
Anybody in the country that wants to increase their knowledge on the National Electrical Code could benefit from taking this course. And so it's a great value. It's a great value.
EAC.edu?
That's right.
That's right. And 55 and over, their in-state tuition is covered.
That's correct.
Not out of state.
In-state tuition is covered.
That's what I'm saying. Right. So if you're out of state, your tuition's not going to be covered. But if you're in state, your tuition is.
Right. And if you are out of state, the amount of in-state
is prorated.
Will reduce. But okay. It's still, you know, that, whatever you said, 1,100 minus
1194.
The in-state tuition rate.
Yeah. Minus two, what did you say?
294.
But there's a lot of people 55 and over that could also benefit from this.
Hey, there's working guys out there that are in their 50s.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. With the economy the way it is right now.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right. EAC.edu is the place to go to find the course, correct?
Yes. And the next session starts May 28th, I believe.
On May 28th. That is correct.
All right. Mark Andreessen with EAC's Electrical. Lori Dugan, thank you so much. I appreciate it very much. Thanks,
thank
guys.
You.
Thank you, David Bell.
And thank you all as well. I appreciate it every single day. I'm out of here for right now, but I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.